When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee, and on this week's show, we have David Edwards. David is the co-editor of the website Media Lens, which has been campaigning for compassionate reporting on human and animal rights and environmental politics for two decades. His work has appeared in Tricycle, The Ecologist, Resurgence, and New Internationalist magazines. In 2007, he was awarded the Gandhi Foundation's International Peace Prize. He has also been published in The Guardian, The New Statesman, Golf Today newspaper, The Times Literary Support, Red Pepper, S Magazine, and many others. David is the author of Free to Be Human and The Compassionate Revolution, Radical Politics and Buddhism. And his new book, A Short Book About Ego and the Remedy of Meditation, is published by Mantra Books. And David, wonderful to have you on the Great Awakening Show.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Lovely, 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 lovely. I mean, it's fascinating, the ego. And today you're going to give us all of your divine wisdom, you know, about the ego, because it's just so misconstrued and it's so, people don't really understand, you know, what it is and everything. So, yes, and we will get onto your beautiful book, A Short Book About Ego, which is just so great.
Great, thanks.
So can you just explain, David, to our audience, what does the ego mean to you, and can you explain about the ego and the true self that we all have?
Yeah, there's a Sufi story that goes that God plays a little joke on us when we're born. He whispers in our ear, "You're the special one." And the joke is that he says that to everybody. And we come into the world peeping out from our heads. And from the first moments, we're the center of attention, or certainly we're the center of awareness. So we feel as though we're at the absolute center of everything. And then we meet lots of other people who've also been told they're the special one, who also feel they're the center of awareness, the center of the universe. And so there's immediate conflict there because we all want to be the special one. And a great example is... the Portuguese football manager, Jose Mourinho, who won the Champions League a few years ago. And he said to journalists, please don't think I'm arrogant, but I'm the European champion. And I think that makes me a special one. So what I'm focusing on in this book is the ego's attempt to be special, to be extraordinary, to be different, and the different strategies we use to achieve that goal of being the special one.
Sure. And but the ego is not who we are. I mean, through my yoga studies as a yogini for all these years, I've seen it as, the ego is a tool that we can use. We are the observer. We are the true self behind. We are the soul consciousness behind all of our thoughts, feelings, words, and emotions. And we can use the ego, as a tool, because we all need a little bit of ego here on the earth, because we wouldn't be able to survive. It's our ego personality, isn't it? In the 3D that we need. But when that ego starts to overtake us and starts to truly control everything, with its wants and its needs and all of this, that's when, our true self gets put down, doesn't it?
But as I say at the start of the book, the human mind's at the center of a circle of mirrors, which reflect back to us who we are. So parents, friends, teachers, even strangers say, you've got beautiful eyes, or you've got a beautiful voice, or you're incredibly annoying, or you've got big hands, perfect for playing piano. And we form this sort of image of ourselves based on the reflections from these mirrors around us. And this is the ego. We identify with these thoughts that we have based on the judgment of others as to who we are. And so that's an inherently insecure, nebulous concept. And it's just a collection of thoughts, and it's not who we are. Because the French philosopher Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. But if you ask yourself, how do I know I think? Well, there's something in the head, there's a little voice in our head that's babbling away constantly and having all these thoughts about who we are and what people think of us. But together with that voice in the head, there's something that hears that voice.
Yes.
And that's the awareness, that's the consciousness. So there are two phenomena. It's not just that there's a voice in the head, there's a voice in the head and someone or some phenomenon that listens. That's our true self,
That's it.
the awareness and the consciousness, which is the same in everybody. So the ego doesn't actually exist. It's just a construct that we create out of all of these opinions and thoughts, and it has to be constantly maintained by new reflections from new people. So even if you're a star like Bruce Springsteen, you might have had a massive hit album last year, but what about this year? What are the reflections saying to you this year? Well, they might be saying, well, he's not so good now. He was great last year, but he's not so good now. And you can e the ego can easily start seeing itself as a has-been, as somebody who was great and superior and special, no longer is. So we have to keep reinforcing it.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the social conditioning, isn't it? That we grow up with, and we our ego becomes almost like, we mirror our parents and everything, become like them, the programming that we have from society and everything, from, school and our religion or our groups that we belong to. They keep reinforcing that. Yeah, that's who, and the ego doesn't, it's the car we drive. It's how much money we have in the bank. It's the job that I do. Well, that's not who you are. That's what you do. That's what you drive. It's, isn't it? It's like we, it's so many people believe that's who they are.
Well, the mind's able to identify with almost anything. We can feel special because of the car we're driving, or the suit we're wearing, the company we're working for. And we incorporate these because our sense of self, our ego sense of self, is based on these reflections from the outside world, these mirrors that are giving us impressions as to of who we are. We identify with those thoughts. You've got a beautiful voice, or you're annoying. We incorporate those and identify with them. But then when we get into our car, we identify with the car. And if somebody, damages our car or even says something negative about our car, we will feel personally insulted because we've identified with it. And that becomes really obvious when you look at things like politics, philosophy, and religion. People identify with political positions and religious positions. It becomes part of their self. this nebulous concept of self, this ego. And if somebody criticizes my country, you know, if I'm an American, if somebody criticizes my country, I'm going to explode. Or, and all of, if you've noticed on Twitter, now called X, you see people all the time having Twitter spats, which are these long arguments that they have, just two people. Everybody else is watching, and these people are arguing bitterly, insulting each other, trying to win. Why? Everybody else can see that it's the ego, but they can't, because they've identified with a mental position. It's become part of their sense of self. So the ego is literally, in its concept, fighting for survival.
That's
And
right.
that's why they fight to the death. It's absolutely amazing. And so we're able to identify with almost anything. And of course, we know that, you know, the effort to be superior can be something as literally superficial as the depth of your skin. If you have a particular skin color, you feel superior to another person, or if you're a particular gender, or if you've got a particular profession. So the human mind has no problem identifying with almost anything, which means incorporating almost anything into its sense of self. And when it becomes part of the self, it defends it to the death. So this is the root of so much fanaticism and hatred, is this ego, which is this capacity to identify with external phenomena, which have nothing to do with the real self.
That's right. And you know, I like this, I believe this time is like a quickening of this, we're always awakening, but it's a quickening almost of the awakening of many millions of people in the world. And it's like it's a time of the ego really forcing its way up, like the darkness, the ego. I mean, I would call that the negative side of ourselves. I would call that, if you like, the devil, because it's the negative, it's the ego, it's the coming up against the true self, which I would call righteous, godly, divine. We are human divine beings living in this world of duality. But this really is a time when you start to awaken, it's a time of ego death. It really is that it starts to dissolve, and you're like, and everything becomes, you go through the dark night of the soul, and everything that you once held high in that ego state, that ego personality, drops and is gone. It's like egoic relationship, that job you've just outgrown, it doesn't have anything to do with who you're becoming. And that's a time of absolute hopelessness, the dark night of the soul. But that is the breakdown for the breakthrough into the realized self, the realized true self, which we are all trying to merge with, to have that balance of the opposite sides, feminine, masculine, light and dark, isn't it? The ego death.
I mean, when the ego identifies, or the human mind identifies with external phenomenon, as we've said, it becomes seriously attached to those external phenomena, identifies with them, feels that it's part of the self. So when those phenomena, because they're external and temporary and transient, because they eventually change and disappear, that's experienced as huge suffering. It's a part of our self is being torn away. And we're living in a time now when all of the things we've identified with are being challenged and being threatened and torn away. I mean, for me, the ultimate example is the environment. We've been subordinating, we've been attached to all these external possessions and material goals for so long that we're exhausting the capacity of the planet to cope. And the result of that will be that all of the things that we've identified with as part of ourselves, our car, our house, our economic growth, our salary, our future prospects, you know, financial security, are going to be challenged and torn away because they're not part of the real self. And as the planet fails to cope with our demands, that lesson will be taught to us in a really stark and brutal way, as it is already. You know, it's just so clear that the world is heating up very, very rapidly, and all of the things we're attached to are going to be torn from us.
But don't worry, we're going to survive. There's always, the evil has within it, and that's why I call the ego like evil or the devil, because evil has within it the seed of its own self-destruction. And many ancient civilizations destroyed themselves, but I believe that us as a human race, we're going to spiritually evolve, and this is the great awakening. Our ego is the ego dying death time, and we're going to rise up in a spiritual way so that we will be looking after not only just the planet, but each other. And 30,000 children won't be dying a day of starvation, because that is just horrendous that that is happening now in our world.
Well, I
Let's
think
not anything else.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I think as these external obsessions are made more difficult and are torn away from us, the suffering from that will force us to look for answers within.
That's
And
right.
I think that is happening. There is a huge growth in interest in meditation, mindfulness,
That's
and
right.
yoga and qigong and tai chi and all of these wonderful things.
Yes.
So I think as the external fails to deliver, it just can't keep delivering. The
No.
planet can't keep delivering. We'll have to go within.
Because nothing out there in that 3D world can give you the divine love light energy of peace and love, and of that God, or goddess, the source, whichever you want to say within you, the divine intelligence, as when you go within. Nothing out there can give that to you. This is how when we meditate, it gives us, it makes us full. It fills up our vessel, does it not?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's one half of my book is
That makes
discussing the failure of external success, looking at all these examples of millionaires, sports stars, intellectuals, all these guys, football players, who at the peak of success and how it hasn't satisfied them. And the other half of the book is based on my own experience that when this obsession with the external world and the spinning mind that's constantly plotting and plotting to get more pleasures and more success, when that falls away in meditation, there's a huge surprise. And actually, I think a great comparison is with a cinema screen. What's the nature of a cinema screen? It's white, obviously, but we don't normally see that because it's covered over with images, moving images from the film. And when if there's a break in the film, you can see the screen very clearly. It's white. And it's the same with the mind. There's thoughts, as we said, but there's also this awareness. But what's the nature of awareness? We don't normally know what the nature of awareness is because it's covered over with thought, just constant thought, spinning and spinning and spinning. Even at night, dreaming is thinking in pictures. And in meditation, what happens is you redirect your focus from your mind, from the thinking process where you're normally fueling this thinking process. In my case, I redirect it to my feelings. It could be sadness, anxiety, or just nothing, or good feelings. And as I redirect attention from thinking here, the energy from attention goes away, leaves the thinking. The thinking slows down, and eventually gaps appear in the thinking chains of thought. And for the first time, you get a glimpse of the nature of awareness with that unobstructed by thought, not covered over by thought. And the great sort of revolutionary surprise for me was that you just get a little spark in your chest or your lower belly of love and bliss. And I'm sitting on a sofa bed or on a chair or whatever, and I'm just sort of been meditating for an hour, 45 minutes. And suddenly there's a gap in thought, my thoughts slow down, and I feel deep love, as if I'm completely in love without the anguish. So this is our real nature. And this is why, as you said, it can't be destroyed.
No.
Nobody's so broken, nobody's so damaged or evil that you can't reduce the thought process for a moment and experience the love and bliss which is there undamaged. So that's the second part of my book. Talking about ego is interesting, but to me, this phenomenon, which is never discussed, it's been understood for thousands of years in the East.
That's right.
But in our culture, and why? Because our culture desperately needs us to be focused on buying and consuming.
Out there,
and
outside. They don't want us to go within.
No, because their religion is materialism and consumption. If you're working in a corporation, like if you're an executive, senior executive in a corporation, the last thing you want is for people to be finding love and bliss inside themselves. So you're not going to see that near any adverts. No advertiser is going to want to support that. So that's why we never see it.
And all the power that is within. When you tap in, you know, past, future goes, it's just the divine moment in that bliss. Mm-hmm. And the more you practice, the more the space between the thoughts gets longer and longer. And you have longer moments of being in that place. And then you can take that beautiful feeling into every thought, feeling, word, and action of your everyday life, which makes, once you've got your inner state of this beautiful balance and bliss, then your outer shall be in a state of beautiful balance and bliss. Yeah. You know, that's why, you know, in your book, you say that the remedy is meditation. And I just say that all the time. It's the remedy to everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? The remedy to everything, I believe, is meditation. But they don't, you know, now they're starting to teach it at school.
Are they?
Slowly, slowly, slowly. Slowly, 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 yeah. But, I mean, meditation is about knowing thyself, isn't it? Meditation, yes. Knowing thy true self. To go with, you know, psychology is the study of the mind. Why do they not teach meditation, which is the ultimate study of the mind?
Because people like Richard Dawkins, the evolutionary biologist.
He didn't believe in God. No.
Richard Dawkins says, I'm amazed, he said, to realize that we're just robotic machines designed to reproduce our genes. So for science, since the 18th century, European Enlightenment, the reason was everything. Rationality was everything. They thought emotion interferes with reason. But actually, what we've learned, of course, is that when you disconnect reason from feeling, you very easily become a monster, and the state you're in, because the society you're part of, becomes monstrous. Because actually, the greatest protector of reason and rationality is love and compassion, which means you have to be in contact with your heart. It's not enough to just be a brain in a jar. You don't become super rational when you're disconnected from your feeling. You become a dangerous animal, really.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's what it is, having that connection with the inner heart, with the soul consciousness. You know, which is, I believe, a part of the divine, whichever you want to call that, source, God, you know, anything, whatever you want to call that, the creator. There's only one. There's only one story. There's only one creator of everything. But to connect with your soul and that beautiful higher self and that beautiful space, you've got to go within. And that everything that people are looking out there for, ultimately, is spiritual fulfillment. Because after you've had all the money and, you know, all the whatever, the alcohol, the drug, the women, whatever it is, you know, the shopping, and, you know, there's still an empty space within you. And the only way you can fill that up, your vessel, is by spiritual fulfillment. And that's where the dark night of the soul comes in. You have to lose it all for the breakthrough and the break, you know, for the breakdown, for the breakthrough, to gain it all spiritually, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, there's a lovely example just last week, actually. The world's number one golfer is a guy called, I'm not a keen golf fan, but the world's number one golfer is a guy called Scottie Scheffler, who's won all the big tournaments recently, has earned $65 million in prize money. He's far and away the best golfer in the world. And he sat at a press conference last week and they asked him, what does it mean to you to win a major golf championship? He says, do you know what? It's not fulfilling.
Yeah.
He says, I want so badly to win these tournaments. But why? Because when I win, I get 2 minutes of euphoria and then it's on to the next one. And he said, what's the point? He said, so I'm not going to stand here and encourage a new generation of golfers to follow in my footsteps, because what's the point? So wonderful honesty. Absolutely. The corporations and the advertisers hate people talking like that because they want us all to believe in this dream.
That's right.
But so when you reach that point, this is the great crisis that hits people who succeed, millionaires and billionaires. The nightmare for these guys is, I've got everything I want. I'm not happy. What the hell do I do now?
That's right.
And so that's the huge crisis that they face. And I think as a society, we face that, because a lot of people have kind of got what they want in terms of, you know, you've got an iPad, you've got all the movies, the music, everything you want, and it doesn't work.
Yes. Or David, also, you keep going down that road, yeah, and then something is going to happen. I believe, you know, destiny, fate, your soul brings in something. Maybe you get ill, yeah? An accident, a beloved, something happens because you're on the wrong path.
Yeah.
And it brings you in and then it's like, boom. And then you start contemplating and going within, you know. And,
I agree.
Yeah.
You see, the Christians for a long time said there was this great problem about suffering. How can there be so much suffering in the world if God is benign and benevolent? But when you look at it, the one thing that makes people go within is suffering.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what Buddha said. The world is of the world of suffering.
If we have
the suffering, we wouldn't move out of our comfort zone. We wouldn't move and go within. We wouldn't get to the precipice and say, I've got to change.
Yeah, because like you'll just carry on, but we're very stubborn, aren't we? We'll carry on trying to make things work. But it's only when you get hit hard, when you're really suffering, probably happened to you, happened to me, probably, you know, Eckhart Tolle went through a huge near suicidal crisis. Just so many stories like that. And as a species, it's happening to us now, I believe,
with
the environmental crisis, that suffering is the one thing that prompts you to change.
Yes, it does.
Otherwise, we'd be fast asleep.
Exactly. It brings you to the precipice and says, no more, I'm going to stand up and not do this.
Yeah.
In your book, A Short Book About Ego, you describe the three types of ego, yeah? Three types of being: the successful ego, the suffering ego, which is what we've been talking about, and the righteous ego. So, yeah, tell us about that. That's what we've been talking about, yeah.
Yeah, so the successful ego tries to feel special by achievement. So you were talking about Donald Trump in the back of a Rolls Royce smoking a cigar. Jose Mourinho, he's the special one because he won the European Championship. So we all know about that ego. If you're at the traffic lights in a Rolls Royce and there's a guy next to you in a Mini or on a bicycle, you pull away, you identify with your car, you feel special, you feel superior. And so we attain a sense of specialness by success. And then the suffering ego is a bit less obvious. Spiritual teachers use different names for that, like victim identity and spiritual materialism. But the suffering ego, if the successful ego feels special because it's got lots of good things in its life, a suffering ego can feel special because it's got bad things, problems in its life. So a suffering ego feels that its problems are far more important than other people's problems. Its suffering is far more significant. And so just as a successful ego can manipulate other people to pay attention through its success, a suffering ego will manipulate people to pay attention through its suffering.
Yes.
And for example, children with a parent might sit there and say, you got no idea what I go through. It's terrible. And it's another way of being special compared to others and winning attention. And then the third type, the suffering, the righteous ego. So the first two egos are special because of good things and bad things. A righteous ego feels special because it's more concerned about the good things and bad things that happen to other people. So they care more about the country. They're vegetarian or they're more spiritual, and they feel more moral than other people. Yeah. So you can feel special for that reason. So a successful ego has more financial credit. A righteous ego has more moral credit and can feel special for that reason.
Wow. Amazing. That is really, really amazing. And of course, you know, it always gets back to the remedy of meditation. You know, and as you said, many of our literaries have suffered, you know, from anxiety and depression. And how has meditation been a cure for this?
I mean, I used to be quite an anxious flyer. Just this is a really simple example.
Yeah.
You know, it's 20, 25 years ago, I used to have a drink before I went on a flight to calm me down. In my 20s, I had panic attacks. And that was probably the start of my process of awakening, because I thought, wait a minute, what's this? What's happening to my emotions? I'm afraid of my emotions, but I can't control them. And so I learned that if you redirect attention away from your thinking process when you're having a panic attack, and you focus on the symptoms of fear, the lungs inflating, deflating, your heart beating away, and you direct attention to your feelings of fear, the thought process that's driving those emotions slows down, and the anxiety calms down. So anytime I feel anxiety now, in any kind of slightly claustrophobic situation, I put my attention immediately into my chest, and I just feel my feelings. And because I'm feeling my feelings intensively, I'm not thinking, these terrifying thoughts driving the fear and ultimately a panic attack evaporate, and the whole thing calms down. And then another example, 5 years ago, which I do write about at the end of the book, my dad actually died during the COVID pandemic. He didn't die of COVID, but he was trapped in a hospital for the last 4 weeks of his life with kidney failure and heart failure. And we weren't able to see him at all in the last 4 weeks until they let him out for 24 hours, and he died within 24 hours of coming home. And I wasn't able to see him. And the sadness and the anguish from this was so intense that it felt claustrophobic. I've noticed that when our dog died, we had a refuge dog that we loved dearly. It's almost a feeling of being trapped, because you can't, there's no way you can escape from your sadness. So I sat down after my dad died, and I watched all these thoughts of thinking of his life, you know, what happened, what we should have done, what we didn't do, how awful it was that mum was on her own after 60 years together, what would happen to her. And I took my attention away from this thought stream, agonizing thought stream, and put it onto this sort of bubbling black turmoil of pain and suffering and sadness. And I watched it, and I just felt it, and I felt it, and I felt it. And after sort of 40 minutes, 45 minutes, it started to ease down, because of course the thoughts had slowed down, so they weren't driving it. And it started to feel pleasurable, which felt almost indecent, actually, because wait a minute, my dad died 4 days ago and I'm feeling pleasure. Is this some kind of masochism, you know? And then I can carry it on. And then there was this spark, because there was a gap in thoughts, there was a spark of bliss and a spark of love. And that sort of filled my chest and lower belly. And I'm not making this up, you know. And 4 days after my dad died, I was sitting meditating, just feeling love and bliss. And it sounds like you're able to maintain it quite consistently. For me, it comes and goes, because I do a lot of political journalism. Mm. When that political, you know, when you're upset about horrors in Gaza or the Ukraine or climate change, that sets the mind in motion, you know, and then it's more difficult to feel these things. But I've just had this experience so many times that even the worst suffering can be alchemized, a kind of human alchemy into love and bliss, simply by placing attention on the suffering. So suffering is, it can be a portal, it can be a route into your real self, which is always blissful and always full of love. And to me, it's such a positive thing.
Yes.
And I'm hoping I can stabilize it and experience it because, you know, the claim is that people, it can become your constant state, which would be absolutely marvelous. Yes. But so I just wanted to share it with people, you know, and explain the failure of ego doesn't work and the complete availability of this experience that's inside.
That's absolutely beautiful and profound, isn't it? You know, the suffering, not only is it our biggest teacher,
yeah,
you know, it also reminds us that all beings suffer, you
yeah,
know, in this world, and it gives us empathy for them. Through our suffering, we learn to have empathy for others, you know, and then we can turn our suffering into being of service to humanity.
Yeah.
You know, learning about becoming, turning it into bliss. That's exactly what Buddha said, what the yogis do, and what, you know, is the most, going within and turning that around. It's so important. And not using it as destructive pain. You're turning it into love.
And the beautiful thing is, there's a Buddhist story that's, or comment that says, when you put an eyelash on the palm of your hand, you can't feel it. But if you put an eyelash on the surface of your eye, it's horrific. And they say the difference between a master of meditation or Buddha and us is that for them, they have the sensitivity of the surface of the eye, whereas we have the sensitivity of the palm of our hand. And when you sit and focus on your suffering, on your pain, what's the first thing that happens? Is you become very, very familiar with your pain, with how much you're suffering, instead of constantly distracting yourself, not wanting to look at it. What happens then is, when you see that pain in somebody else, you can feel it really, really deeply because you felt it really deeply into yourself. So I understand the suffering of a panic attack. I understand the suffering when I lost my dad and other people I've loved and animals I've loved. And so you feel the suffering acutely in yourself, become completely familiar and aware of it. And then you become that much more sensitive to the suffering of other people. And because they, you know, they're like the Buddhists say, Shantideva said, what's the difference between me and you? Your suffering is no less importance than my suffering. So of course,
it's all relative.
So if I'm aware that I've suffered, and of course I want to help you avoid the same suffering, which is why I wrote the book. So there's so much to be gained from being really sensitive to your suffering and being aware of it and moving through it to bliss.
That's right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
It's embracing the darkness within, isn't
it? Yes.
Embracing the darkness within, because we're all dark and we're all light. We can't be up there with the unicorns and the fairies and everything all the time, because it doesn't work like that. We live in a world of ego. We live in a world of suffering, and you know, I believe that this is a time where the darkness is coming up to the surface, because we can't build the new earth, which the new awakening people, the new spiritual fulfilled people that we're all turning into. We can't build that on the darkness underneath. So we are really in a chaotic time, but out of the darkness will come the light, and out of chaos comes order, you know?
Yeah.
So we have to go through that. But you know, one of my gurus said, and it just stays with me all my life, earth peace through self peace.
Absolutely.
We cannot have that peace if we don't have it within ourselves and then be an example and give it out, to our families and to our societies and to the world. That's.
Absolutely. In fact, I was watching the latest Eckhart Tolle video. You know, he does these monthly videos. I get those every month. And he was talking yesterday about they started off with very good intentions in communist Russia and communist China, for example. And they talked about equality and, justice and human rights. And it's the same with all of these political revolutions, is that the ego is alive and well. I mean, I do a lot of political journalism. Try talking to people who are interested in my political journalism about issues like the ego, love, compassion, meditation, because they're in their heads, so
That's
much in their
right.
heads, not connected to their feelings. They just think it's the world of Disney. They think it's absolute just nonsense. And so all of these revolutions bring this monster ego unobserved with nothing to check it. What
That's
happens? It becomes a new version of egotism and all the horrors that go with it.
it's like you become like my Mao, yeah. And you become the complete dictator and kill 90 million people or whatever. But you see, that's where it doesn't work. Because in communism, you've always got someone who's in control. And that one in control is, I'm the dictator now. And it becomes the ego. Yeah. One has to rule over. You can't. No, it's, yeah.
Well, where people can talk a lot as much as they like about, yes, we need egalitarianism and justice. But if there's an unobserved ego inside of the person saying that, you can be sure that that ego wants to be special,
That's right. That's
wants to be number one.
right. And we're all special. Every single one of us, as a yogini, I believe that we are all have the soul consciousness of God within, and it's equal within every single living being upon the planet. There's only one creator that when we was born, put a little bit of the oneness of the soul into each and every one of us. Yeah. And that's where when you realize that oneness, you cannot harm another because you'll be harming yourself because we are all connected by the same soul consciousness of the creator. This is the one thing that's going to override all suffering and everything, really, is when we have the empathy and we realize that we're all brothers and sisters here, we're all human and divine, and we all have the same consciousness within. There's only one shared between all of humanity.
The only thing I'd say to that is that for decades and centuries, we've sat down and said, we're all brothers and sisters, we need to help each other, we need to be kind, we need to do this, we should do this, we should do that. And when we say things like that, we're generally working from the mind. And the mind isn't very powerful in that sense, because if it's competing against the ego, whereas if you experience love and bliss, then you have that's just so much more powerful than ideas about love and bliss.
You've got to experience it. You have to experience it. Otherwise, you just keep never knowing, and you'll keep reading book after book after book after book after book instead of sitting there and experiencing and going within. Yeah, that's
Exactly.
right.
And it's what you're saying, Jan, about bringing it with you, the love and bliss. I still get upset. I find it difficult. But there will be times when I've experienced love and bliss when I'm looking at these awful images on Twitter and I'm feeling love. I'm certainly not feeling hatred, and I'm feeling love because I'm feeling compassion.
Yes.
When I see, these awful images of the parents suffering and so on, you don't have to be sort of torn apart by hatred. You can bring the love with you,
That's
and
right.
the compassion. The compassion is not a painful feeling. The compassion is a blissful feeling. It's part of love. It's the other side of love. So even images and events as horrendous and horrific as that, you can feel love as you're witnessing them. So we don't at all have to go down the terrible path of hatred and wanting revenge and wishing disaster on people. So it really is so important to have that, because if you let your mind go into that darkness and let it spin away and build up with the hatred and the suffering, you can become just a huge part of the problem.
That's right. That's right. That's what they say, don't they? You know, like a criminal can look at criminality. A person can look at criminality, then they can be involved a little bit in it. Then they become more involved in it. And before when they wasn't involved in it, they looked at it as terrible, terrible. But then they become involved in it. Oh, it's okay. It's not so bad. And then they become it. And then they become the criminal. And they think it's just a normal way of life. No, no.
Well, the irony is that you end up becoming what you hate.
That's right.
And so Nietzsche said, didn't he? Said, be careful if you look too long into the abyss will look into you.
Yeah.
And so, and yet we think we're doing something wonderfully righteous because we care so much about these suffering people who are being tortured and killed. And it, yes, it is a, so it's important to care, but it can become toxic. And that's where it goes back to the idea of the righteous ego. You know, the righteous ego can become very toxic. So we, it's not a good way to go.
Yes, definitely. And that's where I believe, you know, where that divine source, God, whatever you want to call it, you know, people say, oh, well, what about the suffering in the world? Well, that's man's cause of that, free will, yeah. We all have within us to wake up in the morning and choose the ego or choose the true self. To choose the darkness or the light, to choose the devil or to choose the righteousness, the good true path. What are you going to do today? It's all our choice, you know, is it not? It's so profound. It really is. And I just want to say, David, thank you so much for writing this book.
Thanks a lot.
It's really a subject that never gets taught much, yeah. But the way that you've written it is so easy to understand, and with all of the different, like Charles Darwin and everything, and with all of the different people can relate to that, you know.
Great. Well, that's what I'm hoping. Yeah. So it's lovely to hear that because it's just been published. So I haven't had many responses yet. So it's encouraging that you like it. It's
Yeah,
great.
definitely. And David, I just say I want to thank you so much for all of your wisdom on the ego and for giving us, you know, it's a real sort of probably a passionate project of yours because you lived it. You know, this is where it's so important for us to live it and to write it and to give it out to others. It's all about our personal experience, isn't it?
It is, it's not enough to follow other people and to say, you know, I bow down to the guru and the ancient traditions. You can only make progress if you actually pay attention to your own experiences, your own feelings, your own suffering, your own capacity for happiness and bliss. It's not enough to follow. We have to develop our own traditions as individuals and create something new that we're not less than the people in the East who achieved attained enlightenment and have passed on these wonderful traditions. We can do it ourselves. We have to stumble through the dark ourselves and grope through the dark and find our way. And we can make progress and help each other in that way.
Beautiful. Well said, definitely. Well, David, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the Great Awakening Show.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.